increases any sort of skyline inquiries. It appears to me overnight this Christian life for the last was banked yesterday. That's maybe in the difference, but I just wondering if you could tell us what the traffic flows are on Franklin Road, the section 6A from State Highway 6A from the roundabout in Queenstown, the daily flows and the peak hour flows. It's probably in there somewhere, but
yes, we've been on
And which paragraph was that?
5.115.
So what were the figures again?
25,818. That was for the December 2016 count.
The total and for peak hour?
I haven't got any peak hour. I've ordered it on your average daily traffic.
Yes, with you. Yeah. I think that at some stage it would be carried
out.
And in fact, I understand that because of the nature of that road, whether the peak hour is particularly peaky or what it is, or what it was this morning and afternoon as well.
Yeah, I think it is. Generally the traffic is consistent.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. We're used to peak hours, but that may be
provisions through some of the council's issues, in particular with regard to landscape matters,
I still have concerns about the permissive nature of the activities provided for, including that commercial and commercial recreation activities are proposed to be permitted with no control over scale or effect. This means that it's concerned about the potential for adverse traffic and transport effects associated with these activities. DJV New Zealand Limited, according to the bill 1370, has raised concerns that the proposed sub-zone is not supported by Section 32 analysis, that the proposed provisions are too liberal and would need to be modified significantly to recognise the broader range of activities. The further submitter has also noted that the proposed sub-zone is not consistent with the reserve management plan, and that the planning framework for this area needs to review as it does not represent what has been occurring. Given that the skyline operations represent an existing hub of commercial and recreation activities within Queenstown that are not typical of the rural zone and outstanding natural landscape overlay, I consider this area could be distinguished as policy level. This would be in addition to the policies in the rural zone chapter that provides commercial activity and recognise the modified nature of this part of the rural zone and owner and the tourism activities that occur in this area. Regarding the noise limits for helicopter landing areas within the proposed sub-zone, while I acknowledge that a high noise limit of 60 decibels has been approved by the Environment Court decision CJV New Zealand Limited, Queenstown Lake District Council, I note that this consent was granted with a 5-foot and for a particular location in a particular set of circumstances. I do not consider it appropriate to transfer the high noise limit to the PDP and for it to apply more broadly than what has been approved in the regular consent. This specific matter was also considered in the hearing in the hearing on the PDP in Westchester.
I've got to read to
Provisions for Title 4 request the creation of special sub-zones for the county area occupied by Parani Enterprises and other activities on Box P. My assessment leads me to consider that with some small amendments to the proposed structure planning rules, the sub-zone has merit and could facilitate further development whilst providing adequate protection for the ONO, which is in the deal.
I am concerned that the land development is permissible to be found in the commercial tourism and recreation platform in the Box 2 area would enable significantly more traffic generation than in North Bay River zoning. Typically, there are no master control or discretion for traffic generation for the commercial activities, and the evidence provided does not provide any comfort that the council will have proper control over transportation matters. That is ensured that transport infrastructure is safe and efficient for the area.
Before we get to questions, I'd just like to clarify the issue regarding the noise limits for helicopters. My hearing notes say that the possibility of moving the helipad was what I suggested could be better to consider in these hearings, not the noise limits for the helipad. Mr. Dent may have misinterpreted that, but as far as I'm concerned, what was put on the table in the earlier hearing was that they were looking at moving the helipad, and I suggested, well, that could be better dealt with in the mapping.
Yes, well, I wasn't at the hearing that day, but I wasn't able to find any record of what was suggested in the evidence. We did check for that in terms of our notes and the minutes.
Yes, well, there was no meeting minutes, but I wrote in my notes what I suggested. That would be better to deal with the moving of the helicopter that passed the pass. And I think that is clearly foreshadowed in the area that I've chosen, but we haven't discussed transferring the noise issue to now.
Okay, thank you.
The
council called evidence from Dr. Tyler in that hearing stream, and
yes,
has specifically addressed that matter.
And I've got the report on it.
Oh, thank you. So,
I don't want to have to change it.
It might be an issue
if
you
take up
with
Mr.
G, but that's fine.
I can tell him that too. I will tell him exactly the same as I told you. I was hopeful you'd be here this morning. I wouldn't have to say it twice.
Okay.
Ms. McCorkle, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. I think it's your evidence in chief. Don't worry about looking it up because it's a general question. You talk about the members of scope, and it's the question of the submission only seeking a subzone within the rural zone. And in fact, things have moved on at the lower level and it's now Queensland Town Centre. I want to know if the activities that are taking place now at the lower level and the ones that may occur there, what their status is under the Queenstown Town Centre zoning.
They fit into that definition of commercial activity. I think that they do, yes. Yes, so they would be dismissive. I don't have to check in front of them. No, I mean, no, 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 it's a moving, 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 no, it's a moving,
I can see other reasons why it might need to, but yeah, just in terms of that activity.
And in terms of the base building.
Yeah, the base building, yeah, yeah, and what they might want to do with it.
I would expect that commercial activity that comes to the
I must admit, I didn't diligently choose the definition of commercial activity.
Can I find that?
Yes, please.
With reference to the Epitomic Town Centre, is that a fact or is that a proposal to submit?
It's notified to the Town Centre.
It is notified to the Town Centre, okay.
And the space of 10 times 50, I thought it was kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an effective space. Yeah.
All right, we'll bring down to the design of the one slash one and the other one.
And maybe I can ask Ms. Lee to get the point of clarification about traffic signs. When I made a mistake, when you assess the traffic, which generally goes with the base building, doesn't it? Did you assess it against what might be possible in the Queenstown Town Centre zone in terms of other activities, or only against the rural zone?
For this one, I wasn't certain of what the
none about that.
Yeah, so it's just the uncertainty of difficult to assess what the special impact is.
So you can assess what's there and it's had a number of consents.
Yes, currently there's causing the car park.
And then it has a Queen's Town Centre zone in space.
Yeah.
So that presupposes the traffic that generated from future activities, if it was is acceptable in that area. And what we don't have is what they're going to do, which might explain the difference between that level and that level.
Yeah.
Okay. There's nothing you could have compared it to. I mean, like another gondola or anywhere else. No? Okay. Thank you.
I didn't quite hear the question, but in the town centre zone, anything that's permitted provided complies with the standards, pretty much.
Okay, so in that case, Mr. Chair, would it be fair to assume that the base building could be in the Queenstown Town Centre zone?
Provided it met the height limits and principle.
And if it didn't, it would meet a consent of some kind.
And it would be probably restricted discretion of the high standard. That won't be to do with the activity itself.
Well, I'll go on and maybe we'll come back to that one because this is one where my knowledge is concerned. That was the discussion.
I wanted to ask you about the role of integrated transport assessment, given that it sounds like it's a permitted activity. What they're doing in the base building is a permitted activity, and I'm assuming that it's the base building that generates the traffic. So, can you attach a standard requiring an RTA, which is an uncertain outcome to a permitted activity? I don't think you can.
You could have put them in that activity, but I guess the, what occurs in the base building, the traffic associated with that, there's all the traffic associated with people getting up the gondola and other
things. They have to go through the base building to get on the gondola boat transportation,
eh? Yeah.
So it's a funnel.
Isn't the answer to that? Just look at your transportation standard.
Yeah.
You need the parking requirements or you have an integrated.
And you could do that for a permitted activity?
Let's play that for the other permitted activity. You have to have X number of car parks.
That part I get, but and the RTA has uncertainty in the
sense. But if you don't provide X number of car parks, then
you trigger a consent.
You trigger it, but okay. Of course we don't have the transportation factor. In stage one. So that leaves us with a difficult situation as to how to deal with that.
And the thought would be in the evidence of moving away from that. Can I
just make a comment on the relevance of any transport rules? This is something that came up in the upper COVID hearing, and in the absence of not having a transport chapter at this time, if there are any specific standards or specific rules that, the threshold where it might go from committed to strict discretionary, council's position is that you can make those recommendations alongside, for example, the skyline submission, and when the transport chapter is notified, they would just slot into that chapter. So it's a matter of ensuring that a complete package of recommendations are made at this time, and then it's essentially just a matter of transferring it into the transport chapter at the time.
Right, so that means, in terms of the mechanism we have to use, the banks could tell us what would be an appropriate parking standard and the point at which it would trigger the requirement for a integrated transport management plan. And that would be the way to deal with it.
Yes,
if
it's
we
from a medical perspective, it can be addressed now.
Yes,
clear about that.
Yes. Well, that's fine. We just need to have the information and not pretend that we can't deal with it.
Yes,
that's
fine. There's
a way
to deal with it.
Yeah.
So while I'm on that, the same applies to the likes of any good standards that may be required in relation to a specific rezoning submission. The panel's recommendations can include, for example, a standard relating to earthworks. It can set aside, for example, a new subzone in the meantime, and it's a matter of transferring it into the appropriate chapter at the relevant time.
So following up on Mr. Chair's comment about an appropriate threshold for parking standards, would either of you have any information to hand that would help find that? This question will be hot to the witnesses for Skyline, of course, but just wondering. It's such a bominous thing, having it gone to the right of the town compared to the country. More than half the people walk to it. According to the evidence of the submitter.
And also, without knowing what scale of activity that the base building or any extensions to it
well, you don't know
generate,
that.
Then I
don't know.
That's a question.
Do they have an application in the parking building at the moment?
Not sure.
Doesn't tweet
yeah,
I know
that it's been
lost,
but it's
certainly
been
raised. Okay, so that's sort of something to be said. Okay, of course I had one thing. Dr. Reed. But I think I understand what you're saying. When we did our site visit, we went up in the gondola and went up
to the new area on the northern western side of the northeast side, forgive me, of the luge and had a look at its visibility. Now, that's visible from which parts of Gorge Road? I think you're suggesting a building restriction area,
yeah.
And I'm assuming that that's because if the trees are removed from that little knoll, because, you know, part of that area that goes to the north actually goes down over the sun.
Yes, that's right.
So you're thinking about what you can see from Gorge Road.
Yes, and a building restriction on the, there's a little pointy bit of the current concession that wraps down over the face into the Gorge Road Valley. Mm. My suggestion is that that be a high-built area. And the reason that I don't think I can be precise about where the uphill boundary of this should go is that I understand there are operational requirements for the luge chairlift that require a certain freeboard or whatever, which I think they need to take into account. Although, I suppose it depends what you... I mean, my concept of a no-build zone is no building in the terms of a definition. I don't know if they were thinking that no building might mean no retaining walls or things like that. That wasn't my intention. My intention was to ensure that the skydivers or those parapets of this build a block of toilets next to their platform or something like that.
That area has sort of got some possible future as a helicopter landing pad, but it wouldn't be over the edge, would it?
Well, I don't know. No, the helicopter landing pad is above the pond.
Mm. Okay, that's right, you remind me well. Okay.
Mr. Chair, someone else may be for a time.
And I'll check my name.
I think I was going to start and ask some questions along the same lines. Maybe just a scope issue with Mr. Dent's evidence. Is that the issue where he's suggesting different numbers?
Yeah, so in the submission they sort of recently created the outline and then came back for evidence, and in some areas it has expanded. And an issue that I raised with my evidence was that it's difficult without seeing the two overlays to quantify, whether it will be a substantive change, and we also had that before us.
I think my view is on that if we hear legal submissions from Skyline on that point of scope, and I think we've alerted them to the need to provide a map showing us what's different, and then we can make a determination from there. I think that's the easiest way to deal with that. Then in the south of scope, we just have to look at what is in the submission.
Yes, I've clarified my part of the muddle question before about the town centre and starting. It's actually easier. Yes, it is town centre, but the submission is suggesting, or at least the evidence is suggesting, it could go to rural, so that some zone applies to it.
I think,
What's the implication with that again?
Well, I don't believe there is scope,
just a matter of scope. I mean, are they hidden? Unforeseen implications of doing that anyway?
Well, it's difficult for the special aid to make sense of the rural zone.
I should have asked for a separate zone. I should have just asked for your own zone.
Well, I was wondering whether this is a nature zone or it's called a sub zone. Is it actually a zone? What how does standalone rural zone actually apply to?
So I think
if we had a sub zone in place, how would the rural underlying rural zone have any effect on the pool? Would the rural,
I think the question is, would there be any other rural activities that would occur in the sub-zone that would need to rely on the rural rules?
I don't think typical rural activities would be in the sub-zone. thinking through the length for the length axis matter. I mean, that could just form part of the zone.
Oh, it would be forestry.
Yeah. But forestry,
Have you given any thought to the issues that CJV raised about compatibility with the reserve medical care? Who should be taking the, which particular regime should be taking the lead here?
Not in terms of which one to
take the lead. And it's interesting because the evidence, the plain evidence that CJV on the ground is definitely that they are in the reserve management approach, which seems to be the lead instrument on offer.
Yeah.
Thoughts about that, but have you given it?
Well, only in that the reserve management plan needs to be taken into account. And that recognising, I think it was 2005 plan, and things have moved on since then, so we'll have to determine what weight to give that and whether the, in conjunction with looking at the reason of the zoning under the district plan, you also need to look at whether the
a question you may or may not know the answer to, it. Maybe you've got to ask a question. Our reserve management plans don't have a direct regulatory effect, do they? Anything that's in a reserve management plan that needs to be consented would be done directly under the Reserves Act itself?
Yes, so it's not a statutory document. And then it's relevant, and then it feeds into a planning document such as this district plan in terms of that has regard.
And it affects the council's decisions under the Reserves Act as to how they actually manage the reserve and possibly how they LGA considerations as to how they fund it. It's not directive in any legislative or regulatory sense. That was one thing. I had a really thorough examination a few years ago in the Hague. Quicker than I will, and simply
I forgot to ask Dr. Reed. Of course, I should have asked you about the gondola and the cutting through the tree. And what is the width now? The width that was proposed, and then there was 45 meters to 75 meters. I'd like to be clear about those two. And now, I heard the most back of my conversation yesterday about, how do you maintain a defensible line when you've got things like this which are aberrations?
I did know this, but I can't recall where. Is it on the plan?
We discussed
5 metres
for the
existing. I think 5 metres are out. It's not very wide at the moment. Do we have any sort of ruler?
No. I think the evidence is that it's 150 metres.
Well, 75 metres each side of the proposed gondola centre line is what they're proposing. So if that's 75 metres, I think it's about 20-25 metres at the moment. It's certainly being encroached upon by the trees.
Do you have a view on what would be desirable in that?
Well, yes, I do. I would like to see all the ducks gone and replace with traditional vegetation. I understand that what the concern is regarding the gondola is obviously trees falling on the cable, so they want to keep the area underneath and to a certain distance each side clear of trees, but that's very, just a limit to how many trees are growing anyway. So I would like to see it replaced with indigenous vegetation.
So this can be stayed in the form of a cap. Is there any benefit in massaging the edge of the river so it wasn't such a straight thing?
Well, Yeah, well, this was an interesting question that I had put to me by a Lindsay Harkins colleague, actually. My argument would be to leave the boundary card, because then you wonder why you have this, and you have an opportunity to say, well, these are exotic trees that have been sown here, and this is the indigenous vegetation, and this is what it looks like once upon a time, and what we're hoping to restore, at least to some extent. Whereas if you massage the edges, you're implying that the Douglas fir distribution is somehow natural, and supporting the idea that this conifer forest is somehow a natural backdrop to Queenstown.
It would be a little bit easier on the eye.
Possibly, but then you're still left with the flash through the forest of the power line, which is right beside it, actually.
Does Red in the end, did you recommend reducing that width?
Or
maybe
no.
A recommendation about planting underneath it?
Yes. No, I wouldn't recommend reducing the width. I don't think they have any intention of clearing the 75 metres either side. They simply want to have control over that. I mean, obviously it depends on the height of trees, and they're growing at a really quite rapid rate.
But in any case, the forestry and the vegetation and the clearance is all taken care of, and the risk control is like a plan. Just a general question again, not about the evidence so much, just about the future. The population projections of Walter Clark show quite a lot of growth in the base population, and then the evidence is that there's growth in tourism demand as well. The likelihood of the entertainment precinct needing to be expanded within the life of this plan, what's your assessment? Well, let's discuss it there, because I was conscious, you know, with Mr. Heath's work, you know, the commercial and so on, the entertainment precinct is a very precise type of commercial use.
Okay.
And where there's a greater base population and more visitors coming in over, say, the next 10 years, will the current area be adequate to serve them?
The question was whether Ms. Jones evidence in the Scarra stream has considered all of that submission?
Yes.
We've had a look at that submission, and my understanding of it is that it supports entertainment precinct, but also requests that it be extended to include both sides of the building. That's only released sought in the submission. Ms. Jones' section 42 does cover that specific release at
the same character, the spot that they have to use. That may have just been an error in the appendix 2 to the report, which has listed the points and
yes.
Not included that point.
Yes. Yes. But her evidence very clearly concludes that the notified boundaries in that particular area are appropriate and that it would not be appropriate to extend the precinct to both sides to sewer main jurisdiction.
For that. So the council is satisfied that there's no disadvantage in what type of distance they haven't sought to be heard, so obviously.
No,
Submissions 8, 399, 408, 501, 4, 698, and 751 all relate to the appropriate location of the Bowhead ONL, which encompasses Ferry Hill, along with Lake Johnson, Sugarloaf, and Queenstown Hill. I consider that the boundary of this ONL is appropriately located in the PDP. I do note that the portion of this boundary on the southern side of Ferry Hill, which climbs from the Franklin Track to skirt the development areas within the Quail Rise Zone, is less coherent from a landscape perspective than the boundary further west. Regarding the rezoning of the land to the north of Franklin Ladies Mile Road, addressed by submitted 8, 391, 399, 408, 455, 717, 751, and 847. I consider that this land has potential for rezoning for residential development. This should remain outside of the ONL as notified and should be designed to maintain the amenity of the existing Quail Rise Zone.
Thank you. And
a
specifically, the there are a number of submissions received on the local shopping center zone versus the Zabalashi on Hanson Road. Been received in the section 42A report to check the city, but has been cleaned down and Hanson Street by a panel minute of 7 between 6 and 6. The director that these submissions were referred to the panel to hear the submissions on the 10th for better understanding of the actual situation. And continue to adopt the recommendations made by the during the hearings of chapter 15, understand the panel position of my race of rule 15.4.3.2, which requires a special layout change. I have proposed some amendments to this rule to ensure that consent is required for an activity, i.e. the building, and then a comprehensive development plan is required that addresses the neighbourhood's issues. At the time of drafting my question 42A report, there were two consensus lodged over one Hampton Road being processed by council. The first application has since been approved for 10 residential allotments, roading access and development allotments, but other consent remains on hold.
Can I just look at, you made a typo with the RN number. It's RN 16114.
7140.
Thank you. I thought it was amazing that we had 4,500 applications. Yeah. I don't want to
stand me if I'm not having the wrong.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
2016.
There was one Hampton Road first, I think. The bulk of the flatland in on the one Hampton Road site is in the out of control area, is that true? In the first plan. Do we have a choice as to what we can do with the zoning here, other than alter the rules?
Just on site?
Yes.
Okay. Just look for submission points that may have given us over there.
Yes, so even though the landowner seems to want residential activities on it, by the consenting process, they haven't sought that it remain residential. That's happened with the local shopping centre zone.
I have town of position,
but... Yeah, so... Look, the issue, as I understand it, the airport company have with the local shopping centre zone and the out of control boundary is the ability to have residential units as a right in the zone. Is this a site where it could be considered that that option is not available?
There is a rule which doesn't limit the number.
Can the number be limited to zero? Look, I mean, zero is a number.
There is a limit. know where the scope would come from then.
Well, isn't the scope from the Freestone Airport?
I don't think the...
Well, are they not phrasing it to that extent?
I don't think so. I see the preferred position from Freestone Airport. I don't think
they
were the primary...
That's what I'm trying to get a handle on. So they're not treating, they're treating this as if it can have some of these eventual development bottle. Is that your understanding?
I think so.
And the ODP... Yes, it's only residential. But in the ODP, originally before the plan change, 35 was outside the open hold area. It came in plan change 35.
Yeah.
Which of course is the one coming on here.
Approach
to rather than the OCB and then anything new in terms of zoning that are
approaching in terms
of new maintenance. That's what I was trying to get. Yeah. Handle on. So that is.
So
that can so, but it does say 50 units is the number of units. Seems like a lot. Yeah. I think most of the teaching will have to be on the airport company. We need to hear from them on this.
See, this role that's been included by the airport submission, 15.5.4, which requires the acoustic installation.
Yeah.
And that would apply to that. Which is what's shown on the optical planning maps. But on these maps, the line clearly includes the entire lower shopping, local shopping centre zone. And that's the centre of the planning. Yes,
yeah.
So the optical plan, although the plan change 35 noise concerts are being treated as optimistic people within the office, they are not yet shown.
I realise they're not shown, yes, but yeah. They must be effective because we've got...
They'll be treated as
doctors. Yes, yes. So, okay, I'm just going to handle on what we're left with, how we deal with the effort company. That's really my point, having sat for several hours of their submissions and arguments. The other obvious question, and respect of this lady, is access. The ECTA has been quite clear that it should be left in, left out of fencing road. And I don't recall them suggesting there's any road access into the site. Am I wrong here? Other than off fencing road.
No.
Access has to be off fencing road.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, so the local shopping centre zone is going to have a very limited ability to deal with traffic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. That may be a nugatory zone. A nugatory zone.
Sufficient operation of the transport network as a matter of discretion for any development. There's no reason they couldn't stay up.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from one Henson Road? And then we'll go to the other side of Henson Road. And then we'll
stop.
Okay. Well, if we go to the other side of Henson Road, from the area from Henson Road down to Quail Rise, in particular the area from the Transpower substation, I really want to get a handle on your evidence, Dr. Reed, and understand why that particular piece of landscape is outstanding. Is it outstanding in its own right, or is it outstanding because of the hills either side of it?
Well, in my opinion, it's outstanding in its own right, but it's also outstanding in that it is a part of the larger landscape.
So it's... I'm trying to understand whether it's one of those situations where if you were to take it by itself, it's too small to be a landscape, or is it a landscape that you could classify, if you took the hills away, you'd still classify it as an outstanding natural landscape. And you do get instances of that in this.
Well, you get instances like for example, Valley Shore Road at Halfway Bay at Waterbury Station, which we were talking about yesterday, but the Valley Floor has none of those characteristics of an INL, but that doesn't make that not an INL.
I think the best example I can think of is the road at the Greenwood Bay, and you have to. The court leader said that has to be part of the outstanding natural landscape because it's too small to be by itself.
Well, that is certainly too small to be a landscape in its own right. It is the case that the slopes have slightly lesser natural character than the higher slopes, but in fact the general slopes of Ferry Hill and K number 2 don't have exceptionally high natural character. In my opinion, it's much more an aesthetic matter, but despite the power lines, that hill slope provides very high aesthetic value to people moving past Harvey, not Queenstown, because it can't be separated from the hills on either side of it, it's really important in my opinion. part of the landscape context of Queenstown.
If we didn't accept the Spencer's recommendation to rezone all that area rural, and we instead reduce the median density zone to just be between the line that you are recommending as the ONL line and the health control boundaries, then there's a strip of median density housing. From Ms. Banks' evidence, that strip of how to control boundary looks like it's slightly more than 50 metres wide.
You mean the strip between the road and the out control boundary?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the Trans Power substation, it comes to a point, obviously, it's unusable, but further east, there could be an area that could be developed as medium density residential.
You mean between the out of control boundary and the ONL line?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Now, if that was developed for medium density residential, would the what you term the obvious transition from one landscape to the other, would that still be obvious?
Well, that would be slightly, it would be obscured by buildings to some extent, but there would still be shared use between the buildings, and it would still be clear that there wasn't anything on the slope behind the building.
Okay. And then the other question that arises, if we were to do that, and the sites then had the flat part was medium density residential and the slope part was zoned rural, and those landowners then sought consent for a building platform in the rural part, what would your views be on that?
Well, they have to be assessed of building
building platforms
on the
ONL. Other than building platforms, what other use could you see that those pieces of land could be used for? And I don't know the size of them, but maybe a few thousand square metres.
I suspect that's beyond my expertise.
Well, but you can't. Other than leaving it in the past, that's or a building platform, is that essentially the options that you see? Or maybe I should ask the Spanks about potential activity.
I suspect that you should.
It would be helpful to change the mark. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, but perhaps we just finish this first, because a lot of it hinges on Dr. Reed's evidence anyway.
Yes, okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes, I
Christian has got to where he is able to if the area between the OCB and the ONL lines was filled only in density residential, what practical use could be made of the remaining rural part in the slope? What are the options available for such a land?
Are you referring to the remaining rural land that would be within the
ONL? Yes.
If it was left in rural zoning, there's potential for people to apply for building platforms in that area. If it was to be or could be integrated with the medium-density zoning, then other possibilities could be realised in some connections to that landscape for the residential uses that are occurring adjacent to it.
You mean like a reserve?
Perhaps
not for
public
foundation
proposals,
which is
around the constraints on the site.
That's part of it. Are you familiar with Section 85? Yeah. Section 85 essentially says that people can seek compensation if there's no practical use of their land. What I'm trying to ascertain is whether there would be a practical use of these sites. And from what I understand you say, telling us that a building platform probably is that thing as it was reserved. Is that essentially the essence?
No, there's the options available to us, whatever the rural zones allow, and the uses that occur within that land at the moment. There may be over time other uses for that land, but at this point in time, in the stage one zones in front of us, the rural zoning, in my view, is not appropriate, given the constraints of that land.
That wasn't a question. That's up to me. Given that in that circumstance the area uphill of the ONL would be either the building platform on a, and looking at the, where the transfer setbacks are, in some parts they would be on the lower part of the slope and in some parts they would be in the upper part of the slope to avoid the setbacks. Or reserved, and there's no indication of the council proposing to take this as reserved. Would that be consistent with retaining the ONL features?
No, it wouldn't. I don't know if it's relevant, but most of this land is under one landowner and is part of a much larger parcel.
Then they don't have to have a claim of the titles with the suits.
Maybe.
Yes. And the same with taking options such as using the ability to subdivide or change the zoning. Those are the sorts of things that people will do if it suits them. So I'm just trying to get where we. It's probably the worst possible outcome. Which is why I'm exploring it with you.
Right.
And so you think that would be an unresolvable outcome?
Yes. But would it be more positive? I mean, this is the first time I've seen this sandwich right now. I understand, I'm guessing, is what council's now proposing.
That makes four of us.
Oh, and I mean, the transfer corridor takes up an enormous chunk of that land. Once you take the rural general setback into account for 20 metres, assuming if subdivision occurred along the ONL line, the the constraints of the existing feedback built in time and the transfer corridor make that land almost unbuildable.
Well, the other question I have in respect to that, I agree with what you're saying, and I'm just wondering whether you would find it more desirable if that was the outcome, if the buildings were downhill of the transfer line rather than uphill.
Definitely. Mm. I mean, I've been advocating for probably 10 years for the development of this land. I've always thought that it should have been part of Change 19. It's a shock to me to see that the air control boundary has resulted in a large chunk of us becoming undevelopable.
Mm.
It always seems to me that it was a logical part of the urban, and it should be a logical part of the urban framework of French town.
Yes, well, that's another question. Just to read with the plans.
I have one for Dr. Reed. And the evidence of the landscape architect, the owner, who proposes, and I've seen him and he proposes an OML line following the waterway that at 140 or 480 metres above. Where on the landscape could I see that? Because of course we could go onto the property to actually figure that out.
Well, in my rebuttal evidence I included some photographs that I took, and it's not very clear, but Mr. Bentley's line is the blue dotted line. So it probably is that you can actually just see the line when you're there of the water rate.
Just let me find the photo.
Yes.
I'm in the rebuttal.
It's attachment 2 of my rebuttal, isn't it?
I'm getting there. I've got attachment 2, okay. So,
my reason for including those wasn't to be evidential, it's to say that to give you something that you can take on field and get an idea of where the two lines.
I do remember seeing that now. I can remember how it reads in the landscape. Thank you.
Certainly, you cannot see a continuous line. There's a line and then over a bit of another line. So it's not easy to identify.
Would you be able to roughly pencil in where that is?
I really don't feel I could do that.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
With any accuracy.
I might get Mr. Skelton.
James Bentley.
That's fine, Mr. Bentley. I might be able to do that. It seems that it goes around one knoll from the photo. And it looks like that knoll is actually up beyond the approach of
it. Yes, that's to me too.
Do you mean the line at the far right?
Yes, the dotted line.
Yes, I think that's right almost around the corner of Clow Rise.
Yes.
Yes. Which is why it looks like it's lower.
Yeah, and so I don't think any of us is suggested line is actually within the urban growth boundary. That's what I was getting used to.
No, it's not. Oh, well, it will be, yes. The bit that you can see
in the final right side?
Yes.
But not the bit that we can see that.
No, of course not.
Did you have any questions specifically about Dr. Reed?
Yes.
Yes. On that case, perhaps if we hear the planning
yes.
summary.
Yes, absolutely. So, this is paragraph 6 of her evidence summary. Give the panel a moment.
can I make a comment on this plan if I've only just seen it for the first time? Is it appropriate or...?
Can we wait until we've...
Further.
...ahead? Because the place may want to explain it all first. And I'll just make some notes on our conversation before we proceed.
On the northern side of State Highway 6 at Franklin. This land was notified part rural and part medium density residential. I've assessed these rezonings from a strategic point of view, considering the overall scope of relief and the constraints on development applicable to this land, including the ONL, the OPD, and the National Grid and substation. We've also considered the expert evidence suggesting traffic generation effects of commercial or industrial zoning and the possible economic risks of additional commercial zoning in this location. Recognising that the economic evidence identified the PDP provides sufficient commercial capacity to 2048 and for industrial land to 2038. My recommendation is that the rural zone is most appropriate for land between Hampton Road and the Hawthorne Drive roundabout because this land is significantly constrained by the ONL, OPD and possible future roading infrastructure. I recommend that the remaining land from section 133, Franklin, Lady Vermont Highway, which is the land to be shown on this map, rather than focus zoning. This rezone is high density residential because this land is less constrained and can provide greater development opportunities in an appropriate location. This recommendation results in accepting the condition of 7 cents in part for the rezoning of medium density to rural and accepting the submission of the general trust in part. In recommending rezoning to high density residential, I've also recommended some new or amended provisions for Chapter 9 and Chapter 27, including a 50 metre building restriction fronting State Highway 6 and a 6 metre boundary setback fronting the Quail Rise Special Zone. A new policy in Chapter 9 to ensure that an integrated road network is established through this land prior to or as part of subdivision and development. A new rule in Chapter 9 to make 4 or more residential units on the site in this area a discretionary activity as opposed to restricted discretionary to ensure that the strategic objectives and policies of PDP can be considered for a significant residential development in this area. In Chapter 27, adding an exception to Rule 27.5.5 relating to controlled subdivision for multi-unit development to ensure it does not apply to this land and that subdivision is otherwise assessed as an RD activity with council having the ability to decline consent. And adding a rule in Chapter 9.5.14 making national grid sensitive activities inside the national grid yard a non-complying activity because it's not otherwise addressed by Chapter 30.
The modern plan of St. Mary's Fix between Hampton Road and Cuppy Beach Road is used by rural community density recognition. There were numerous commissions for this area, generally for intensification of the land to enable commercial activities such as business and food stores. My concern is the client of land court for rezoning and its associated traffic effects that may be generated from enabled development for the USA. In my evidence, achieved by recommending a reduced DMZ or a maximum of 10 hectares to address these concerns, or a residential of equal or lesser density which also address my concerns. I have also taken into account NZ Transport Agency's evidence on the wider site,
and agree that if this is only sort of wider Leeds Valley area from Hampton Road to Federal Drive, it would be more appropriate in terms of the traffic movements that would be generated compared to that of a commercial area. I consider that the Hampton Road intersection of St. Harry's 6 is unsafe for right turn movements out of the site, which I agree with the Joe O'Connor Drive at the intersection. I agree with the embedded transport agency's view that a landing north of St. Harry's 6 should be restricted to residential activities, as it would provide for better traffic outcomes with less traffic generation. And I am concerned about pedestrians crossing the state highway as opposed to speed limit of 80 km an hour. The development on either side of the state highway would generate pedestrian trips, and they should not be discouraged either.
Are there other circumstances in the district where that occurs? Is there any difference in the suitability of the land along this entire stretch for the residential zoning?
Sorry, can you repeat?
In the absence of the constraint, is there any difference between the land that you propose for high density residential and the land you propose for rural zoning? In terms of its ability to be used for high density residential?
Yes, the difference being topography and the area which I've recommended recent high density is flatter land, less constrained by the old now, which also relates to topography and the ability to more easily develop than land.
The Hilton Hotel example you gave has stream topography in it, high density residential. So would you say that the land you described as being topographically less suitable was less difficult to develop high density?
Possibly not. I don't think I could remove the fact of the O&L line through that land. From my view on the ability to develop that land.
I was thinking of a physical suitability, not any planning constraints upon it, which is why I asked the question the way I did.
There would obviously be a means of developing that land, just like there is planning question, but it's quite challenging. Based on its current form, that was part of my consideration as to what land would be, and also in the context of development capacity and an adverse land that is suitable and can be more easily developed, and for, I guess, a better price point as opposed to creating challenging land which is more expensive to develop and might really offer more expensive housing.
The O&L line I've been wondering about
position of that line and whether or not it could go further up the hill, in which case it would be open to manage the backdrop issue, which I think is one of the legibility things you're talking about, isn't it, Dr. Reed, when you come into town. I'm still trying to understand how the interface between high-density residential and the home gets managed. In the case of the Hilton, there's a road. How is it managed and for what purpose?
I think that's a similar situation to a lot of Queenstown Hill, which also about to start on now, and it's an outcome that results in the district through land that is constrained with urban development that sits within the landscape.
As a planner, you agree that a hard edge, are you saying that you agree that a hard edge is the right way to manage that space?
Yes, and I suppose this goes back to the question on Monday, which I have been thinking about further, and I think that Queenstown is still different in this respect to the other closer, in that Queenstown is more typographically constrained, and that's why we have this hard edge in the land that is at this edge, so if it can be developed, it's more efficient to use it for a more intensive purpose.
Isn't there a similarity between this land in total and in north face of Mount Iron, which has been developed and reached? And in that instance, the council has proposed a soft edge with the large lot residential. If anything, Mount Iron is more landscape than this.
I think the demand characteristics in the closer are different to here again, and if we were to do that here, I don't think having that cluster buffer would be an efficient use of land and close proximity to services, amenities, food transport, networks, all those kinds of things that are available in Brandon and Wildmont. I also don't think it would necessarily, might be a question from Marion, but I don't think it would necessarily add to the, or protect the landscape in this context any more so than having that hard edge. But obviously, through the provisions of Chapter 9 also, that and the amount of discretion that are considered through the subdivision would need to address design and amenity and the connection with that landscape. So I would expect that to be the case in the way that provisions are structured.
When Dr. Green was talking earlier, she said that she's been advocating for 10 years for this area of land, and I'm talking broadly, from Lake Hampton Road to the Tower Road, to be developed. When you as a panel were considering what would appear to be two competing objectives, one enabling this capacity and affordable housing and so on, and protecting the values of the ONL, how did you arrive at your conclusion? What principles would you apply to include that? Come to the conclusion you did. Very powerful piece of land sitting right there, right. I know it's got constraints, including the ONL. Should the ONL be given up? Sorry, Dr. Lee, but the question is, yeah, should it be given up?
Well, I suppose being a planner, I balance and weigh all considerations, not just that, but that being part of it. And
is that realistic when there's a clear indication the height poles are up, they've lodged the application, that they should, for the reason of at least 20 years, have to go through a discretionary activity to see if there's anything they want to do.
Well, I think it's one thing that, you know, the question of whether they, whether it's like going to be implemented or something, we don't know that it's going at this time.
Well, I'm presuming, I presume that they got consent and it was constructed. Would it be such that you'd need to consider the assessment criteria for the rural landscape character portion of the site if they wish to do any alteration to the building?
Isn't appropriate to suggest that land could be used for that purpose.
Okay. We'll take the morning to do it now and then to see that a little bit more.